All right, and welcome everyone to another Sunday afternoon here on Revolution Radio, and I'm also on PSN Radio, thanks to Angel Espino. I'm Stephen Roberts, and this is Cancel the Cabal. I have one of my best friends in this alternative internet media. I want to welcome Suzanne Pozel of OccupyCorporatism.com. Welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, you're very welcome. You're always you're a superstar in my eyes and a lot of other people's eyes out there. According to Occupy Corporatism, 1.7 million people last week, huh?
Yes, I am extremely grateful. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you.
Well, I don't know. I think there's probably a few subjects we're going to talk about this hour that you're on. I wanted to. I haven't really been paying much of attention up to that that Oregon fiasco up there. Is about the only way I want to explain it as. Other people might call it a standoff again or some other type of characterization. But how would you characterize it, Suzanne?
I like to refer to it as a weekend in Oregon with the Bundy Bunch.
Bundy Bunch, okay.
It seems to be very unclear what their modus operandi is, but it is actually very clear. Ammon Bundy has put up a YouTube video and gone into meetings and spoken about this in public. He believes that the Mormon God told him to do this. And one of the things that they have decided they're going to do is take down the elected government in Harney County and replace it with people they think are more constitutional. So I think it's pretty clear what their purpose is. Oh, and they want to return the land, not to the people, but to the private industry. Ammon Bundy spoke about the issue of that land being originally the property of the Paiute Indians.
Ah, okay. That's what I was going to ask, because the Indians were the first ones there.
Yeah, they were. Everyone seems to forget that. Why? Because we put them on little tiny areas called reservations and we forget about them. But yes, it is their land. Now, under the BLM control, the Paiute are able to use it. The people of Harney County are able to use it. Everyone in Oregon is able to use it. Visitors to Oregon are able to use it, including ranchers and loggers under contract with licensing fees. So right now, well, before all of this started, everyone was able to use it. Now, Bundy wants to reserve that for the loggers and the ranchers first. And then, you know, if there's anything left, everyone else could maybe stop by.
Now, originally, the BLM or the government took it for what reason, Suzanne?
This goes all the way back to 1890. And we have cattle barons. We have the biggest cattle baron, who was Peter French. No, he wasn't a Frenchman. But one of the homesteaders that he had screwed over, pardon my French, killed him. And after that, there was complete chaos. So ranchers started divvying the property up that Peter French had acquired. And after a couple of years, not even a decade, we started to see drought. These ranchers started going out of business. They started going bankrupt. And people weren't getting the product that they were expecting in the amounts that they were expecting. Animals, not just the cows that the ranchers owned, but also animals living in that environment were dying. So the government in 1934 said, okay, we'll buy a portion of this and we'll create a refuge. And this refuge will be licensed back to you to use, with a minimal amount of fees. I mean, in today's age, in 2014, what Cliven Bundy was spending per cow was $1.35 a month. Now, if he went next door to one of his Patriot friends, he would have spent $20 a month per cow. So that's a really big savings. And especially if you own your own private business, which is what Cliven Bundy does, he is the CEO of his own company, you want to save as much money as possible. So $1.35 as opposed to $20, you're going to take the $1.35.
I would anyways, yeah.
Or you could just steal the land.
Yeah.
Well, but getting back, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, well, I just thought of something. If he, quote, like you just said, steals the land back, he would have to maintain it and pay all types of money to upkeep it, wouldn't he?
Absolutely. Right now, it costs $22 million a year to upkeep refuges like that one in Oregon. And you and I front that bill. you and I spend almost $1 billion a year in all of the programs, all of the subsidies, all of the insurance claims, including killing off predators. So, you know, cows and bears don't and whatever don't come along and kill the cows for the ranchers. So we're spending almost $1 billion a year in subsidies helping these farmers and these ranchers stay in business. And then they're only producing a fifth of the amount of beef that we consume in this country. So we have to go overseas or maybe just across the border, Canada, Mexico. But if you turn your meat, you know, on its backside and you see it's coming from New Zealand and Australia and the UK and Brazil, like I mentioned, Canada, Mexico, and it's a mixture of all of these. So we're spending a lot of money to keep these guys in business and they're not producing an even... The amount of beef that they're producing is such a small amount. It's not statistically insignificant, but it's not cost effective, especially not to you and I. And on top of it, the beef that is domestically grown that we consume, we pay higher prices than the beef that we're importing. Now, I'm not saying that we should be importing all of our beef. Just because I'm saying one thing doesn't mean I'm agreeing with the opposite. But I think we might want to take a look as far as taxpayers go. Is it cost effective to keep this industry in business? And how can we make it more cost effective? Is there a way that they could produce more and we could get a bigger bang for our buck?
So hypothetically, what do you think his motives are then?
Well, just recently, Ammon Bundy created a committee of safety, which is just some of those people that showed up with him on the refuge. They have served notices. He said that he wants to replace the elected officials in Harney County and the local government and put people in that he feels are more, quote, constitutional. Well, so to me, what he's saying is he wants to overthrow the local government.
Well, okay, overthrow, but put in better people. You know, I'm all for that, too. But
who is he?
Yeah.
The people of Harney County should make that decision, no? They live there. He lives in Arizona. What does he know about them?
Yeah, so true.
And when did we get to this point where people can just take over an area and make demands and threaten to take over local cities and government? You know who does that?
Terrorists.
ISIS does that.
Yeah.
They move into an area, they take it over, they tear down the government, and then they start implementing their own government. They start taking over traffic areas and directing cars and providing meals to people and healthcare to people. Now, albeit it's not great, but that's what they do. And so the similarities between what's happening in Oregon and what's happening in different places all over the Middle East because of ISIS, because of Taliban, because of Al-Qaeda, I don't think that we should ignore this. I don't think we should gloss this over.
Well, I wonder if maybe they're going to send drones over there and take care of these people the same way they take care of other terrorists.
You see, that's the funny thing, though. They put out this idea that the feds are going to come and Waco them.
Yeah.
This came out of their mouths.
Yeah.
And it came out of their mouths based on someone that they have no name and they only call the commissioner. So this is an unnamed source. Okay. So folks, this is BS. This is not true. What is actually happening is the FBI is watching them. They already know that the temperament in media, and it's not just alternative, they're saying it on CNN and ABC and NBC and even Fox, that this could be a Waco style thing. And yeah, the FBI does not want to make that same mistake.
Yeah.
They've come out publicly to say that. They're just simply stepping back and watching. They should be watching. That's what their agency was designed to do. They're doing their job.
Sure.
Because Ammon Bundy should not be there. He has no stake in that matter. He's trying to give the land to private businesses that don't contribute their profits back to the community. They keep them for themselves. If this were Nestle doing this, or if this were Chevron doing this, we would so not support it.
Yeah.
But because it's a rancher, we don't think of it the same way. We tend to forget that corporations are corporations, whether it's Chevron or a local cattle rancher. They are all incorporated. They all follow the same rules as corporations. And because we think of things differently in certain situations, we don't realize that they all do the same types of damage. And that's why corporations are regulated.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. When this first broke out, however long it's been back now, week or 2 weeks, whatever it's been. I just, I haven't really paid a lot of attention to it, Suzanne, but, you know, I thought in the back of the head, the back of my mind, I thought, these people are actually going to try to start the revolution, the hot revolution, if you want to call it, the physical revolution instead of a intellectual.
We're talking about people who are used to this sort of thing. Amon comes from a long, his family have been Mormons for a very long time. And if you look at the Mormon history, this is exactly what their biggest grievance was, besides the fact that the U.S. government was killing them off like they were flies. The idea that the U.S. government gave people land when we were moving out west and said, sure, 40 acres and a mule, go ahead and put your stake in it and you have it. We think that that's perpetual. And times change. You know, Bundy even said this about the Paiute Indians. He said that they had a stake in it. They had a claim to their land, but they lost it. There are things, and I'm quoting him directly. Well, let me just quote him directly. We also recognize that the Native Americans had the claim to the land, but they lost that claim. There are things to learn from cultures of the past, but the current culture is the most important.
Can you repeat that again, please, Suzanne? Sorry to interrupt you, but it just sounded funny when you said that. Go ahead.
Well, you know, coming out of Amon Bundy.
The indigenous Indians thought they had a claim to it. Is that
what
you said?
He said, quote, "We also recognize that the Native Americans had the claim to the land, but they lost that claim. There are things to learn from cultures of the past, but current culture is the most important." And so what he's saying is current culture is that the cattle ranchers had these claims that were given to them 150 years ago or more. And so they have the right to that land. The BLM does not. But I agree with Amon Bundy that we should deal with current culture. And current culture is that the government set aside and purchased, giving these ranchers the equivalency of $1 million each today for that land and have been preserving it. So it's not only for ranchers and loggers to use under licensing fees, but everyone can use it. And the land is not being depleted as it was when it was under the control of the cattle barons. So I agree with Amon Bundy. We should focus on current culture. What he's talking about is the past also. And he should let go of it because, hey, times change. And as far as cattle ranching goes, the government doesn't see the destruction of the land and the depletion of the resources as positive just to keep certain businesses in business. And so if industries have to change the way that they do things in order to stay in business because times change, then they have to. And that means that Amon Bundy and his family might need to change the way they do things because times have changed and the current market in their business means that they're going to have to do things a little bit different. Maybe not taking over public land so they can use it for private gain, but make use of what they have and make better use of what they have.
I see. You know, when you first said that, I thought it meant I just wanted to translate it a little bit. The Indians had a claim, but they lost it. I guess that means that they should have won the physical war instead of losing it and ending up on reservations. I don't know.
Yes, it's completely insensitive and highly ignorant for him to say something like that. His family comes from Europe, so he's not indigenous to this area. But the people who were have been, in some cases, murdered to extinction, and in other cases, given little tiny pieces of land and say, okay, fine, if you need to make some money, go build a casino or sell some cigarettes. These are the people who were here working the land, living on the land. Cows did not exist back then. The European settlers brought over these cows that we're eating today, folks.
That's right.
So I don't even know what Amon Bundy is talking about when he says we need to deal with current culture. He's talking about the past. He's talking about settlers who brought over cows who were not indigenous to this area. And since they've been here, they have notoriously over time, and this is historical fact, I'm not saying this out of my butt, you can actually go look this up. And we have photographs of this. It's current enough to where we have photographs and silent films and records of these things, that these cows were brought over by European settlers and their devastation to the environment has been recorded and palatable. And so this is why we have made refuge, not because we're trying to take over land, but because the land has to be preserved. If you're a farmer then you understand that you have to rotate your fields. And the same idea has to be used in cattle ranching, because if you continuously use the same land over and over again to feed your cows, you're going to deplete the resources. And I'm not talking about 100 years from now. When the government purchased these lands to make refuge in 1934, it was only 3 decades prior to that that the destruction began and these guys started going out of business. So in a span of 20 or 30 years, ranchers can completely destroy that environment and it's useless for their industry. And now they want to go and take other land because they want to stay in business. Maybe they should change the way they do business.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think so. I know. Well, I've heard the reasoning that regular crop farmers can deplete the land inside of a decade if they keep planting one type of a crop.
Well, what you need to do is rotate your fields. You use if you have 35 acres, you use half of it 1 year and let the other half rest and let the resources grow back, I guess. I know that that's an ignorant way of saying it, but that's kind of like what it's doing. And then the next year you use that field and you let the field you used prior get back to where it needs to be. You have to go ahead.
No, certainly. You're right. Go ahead and continue. You're right.
But with cattle ranching, they're eating the grass and they're stomping on the ground and they're destroying the environment year after year after year. All of a sudden you have droughts. All of a sudden you have massive deaths of cattle. Who pays the insurance on that? Not Ammon Bundy, not any of the ranchers. You and I do. They make a claim to the U.S. government and then you and I, our tax dollars are given to them to pay for the loss that they incurred. If you lose at your job, who pays you insurance to give you money back? Nobody. If you didn't show up to work for a month because you had a cancer and you had to take time off, after your FMLA runs out, who's paying your bills? Nobody. But with ranchers, if anything goes wrong, the taxpayers pay for it, including killing off predators. I mean, who kills off a predator for you at your house?
Nobody.
Yeah. Nobody kills off predators for me.
Right, right.
But if you and I were ranchers, we'd get a portion of $22 million a year.
It just seems like a very, very mysterious mess up there, isn't it?
Yeah, because both sides are not righteous.
Yeah.
And both sides have blood on their hands. So you can't stand up for either side. Both sides are wrong. And so what you have to do is come to a compromise. This is not a situation for compromise.
Bundy wants to physically remove the government up there?
They want to arrest the local sheriff and some of the other people who have been elected officials who are speaking ill and making fun of them.
Oh, the poor boy. He can't take any criticism or something? Or
I know. We're talking about the John Wayne types, right?
Yeah.
The Dirty Harry types, right? And so because they get made fun of over the internet and by some of the locals, and there are signs saying, go home, we don't want you here. They can't handle it, so they're going to threaten people who make fun of them. How old are they? Like you said, these are big babies is what they are. They're grown-up babies. The other part that is making people nervous is they are going through files and computer records, and they're hacking into things. So about 30 of the employees who worked at the refuge have been relocated. That cost money, by the way.
Yeah. They're federal employees, too, aren't they?
Yeah, they're being relocated because the people at the refuge, the militia, are accessing their personal records, like their address, their phone number, and their social security number. All of their employee records are being accessed.
Yeah. I got to just mention, Suzanne, you mentioned the corporate angle a little while ago. If let's just say the FBI was doing this, they would have just the opposite argument, wouldn't they? I mean, they would be screaming bloody murder. Instead, they took federal employees off of federal land and more or less kidnapped them and, like you said, relocated them.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that.
No?
No, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service have relocated these employees because because the militia have accessed the employees' private information, and they're afraid that these guys are going to go to their house and do something to them.
Okay.
Another aspect of this is there are over 300 archaeological sites, including petroglyphs, including things that, you know, we cannot replace. And these are artifacts, not just spears and stone tools and woven baskets and beads that, by the way, date back 10,000 years. But the 300 prehistoric sites that include burial grounds, ancient villages, and petroglyphs, like I said, these things cannot be replaced, and they should be preserved so that we can all learn from our past and our history. Ammon Bundy doesn't seem to think so, but it's important to know where you came from so you know where you're going. And they don't have the right to destroy these ancient sites. And yet they're there using the property's machinery and just stomping all over the ground and tearing down fences and letting people use the land. The native Paiute, the head of the tribe, she came out. I apologize. I can't remember her name right now, but she came out and said, "This is our land and we still use this land." She's been on that land using the resources for 30 years. And she doesn't want them to destroy the little bit of their heritage that they have left, giving it over to ranchers and loggers, who, again, are private corporations. He's not talking about the people. He's talking about giving the land to private corporations. And in a couple of decades, they will have depleted the entire refuge. And then what are they going to want? More land?
Of course. Absolutely. They're going to want more.
So what other state park or national wildlife refuge are they going to take over?
Probably somewhere in Washington. Who knows?
Well, they better not come to my state. Stay down there. It's just ridiculous. And the way that it's spun, I understand, you know, we have movements. Stuart Rhodes was just out there saying, you know, if they shoot them like they did at Waco, we're going to go civil unrest and we're going to go take those people down. It's all visceral rhetoric.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I personally don't have a lot of faith in the Oath Keepers myself. For just the fact of what happened up there in Boston, they shut down over 1 million people, and just to find a 19-year-old kid that was unarmed.
Oh, you're talking about the Boston bombing and
Boston
Watertown.
Bombing. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was the government. You know, that was the local police. They were looking for him.
Yeah. Well. I don't know.
You know, to be honest, it wasn't the drones and it wasn't the police. It was a guy smoking a cigarette in his backyard who noticed a trail of blood that happened to lead to a boat he had in his backyard.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, a guy smoking a cigarette. Not that I'm condoning smoking cigarettes,
right.
But you know.
Late at night too, wasn't it?
It was, I think it was like 10 or 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of that equipment, did it work in that instance? No. Did it scare a lot of people? Yes. Did it cost those people a lot of money for those guys to do that to them? Oh, yeah, it did.
Yeah. Yeah, they shut down an entire city. Well.
You got to pay for all that time. You got to pay for the officers. You got to pay for everything that happened that day, all of the equipment that they used.
Yes, you do. Just for a 19-year-old kid. Anyways, what are your thoughts are actually going to happen up there?
And, I'm just watching it. I hope that they're not successful. You know, it's going to be a long winter. I know that they have lots of dildos and lube to keep them company. Some guy just sent a 55-gallon drum of lube for the dildos that they were sent the week before. I think that's funny.
Goodness. Yeah.
But right now, there's nothing to do. When the spring comes and people want to start using the land, yes, that will become an issue. But we've got a couple of months. So if they're able to survive through the winter, then we might have to actually deal with them. But let's see if they survive it.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the other side of this, maybe it's a good idea if they all go there. At least we know where all the actual misguided, dangerous people actually are. You know, that might not be a bad idea.
Yeah. Who are some of the big people in the alternative media movement that are doing things up there?
Well, you've got Pete Santilli, who in my mind is a pretty big potential threat. He has in the past worked with the FBI in order to destroy movements like the Truckers to Shut Down America, who was renamed the Ride for the Constitution, and magically, you know, $50,000 went missing after he got access to their PayPal account. And Santilli has a 30-year history. Vinny and I did a video. It's up on YouTube, the unauthorized biography of Pete Santilli. It's also up on my website, OccupyCorporatism.com. You go to the breaking news section. You can watch it. It's 14 minutes. But it spans a 30-year history of abuse,
another
violence.
Good thing. Sorry to interrupt you there, Suzanne, but you need to put that up on Facebook also as a video. I found out recently that Facebook can be a a lot bigger of a venue to pass a 14-minute video around than what YouTube can be.
Well, yeah, 1.2 billion people are signed up to Facebook.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yes, it is. But yeah, get Vinny to put that up on Facebook also.
The other thing is, if you want to upload the video to your channel, because Pete Santilli has a history of trying to take Vinny Eastwood's YouTube channel down.
Right.
So if you want to upload that, I would highly appreciate it. I would be very, very grateful if you did so. I think more places where it is available, whether it's Vimeo or Justin TV, or if you want to put it on a loop on a Ustream account, we would greatly appreciate that.
Sure. Absolutely. Pete Santilli. What's your personal story on Pete Santilli, Suzanne? I know we can take up the last 25 minutes with this.
Well, you know, just to summarize, the history is up on social media. It's up on the internet. It's widely known.
The story I've gathered is he was loosely associated with you and Vinny and American Freedom Radio, and then he decided to steal Vinny's website name, wasn't it?
There was a conference call between me and Susanna Cole, Pete Santilli. By the way, her name is Susanna Cole. I've actually done a background check. Her name is not Deborah Johnson. Her name is Susanna Cole. And so she and I and Vinny Eastwood and Pete Santilli were on a conference call. Guerrilla Media was a concept that was actively being used by Vinny, who came up with it in 2009 in New Zealand. And he wanted it to be an international thing. And so Pete Santilli became interested. He purchased GuerrillaMediaNetwork.com before we even sat down to have this conversation, and several other domain names to go along with it, including misspellings. So after this conversation where we all agreed upon the structure of the organization and who would be involved in what aspects, considering it's an international project, Pete Santilli contacted me and said that Vinny Eastwood was no longer interested in being part of the project and he had given it all to him, which I thought was ridiculous because at the time, this thing had been 5 years out. I don't understand why you would invest 5 years of your life into a project and then just magically hand it over to somebody else. So I contacted Vinny on my own. We had a 2 or 3 hour discussion about this, and I decided to no longer be on the Pete Santilli show. And couple of weeks later, Vinny and I decided to make a video, which then became history.
Yeah, but somebody also uncovered some evidence that he had an FBI handler, or he had some sort of a association with the FBI up in San Francisco, was it?
No, in Sacramento.
Sacramento.
That was anonymous. And this came out, this is all in the video, and it's all chronologically ordered, so you can see the patterns that Pete Santilli continuously uses over the course of his career. So this is the Truckers to Shut Down America. This is Zeta Andrews. Pete Santilli inserted himself as the media spokesperson and was given the keys to the kingdom on Facebook and in PayPal, and redirected the money over to his PayPal account. $50,000 went missing. Anonymous caught wind of this and decided that Pete Santilli needed to be punished. So they hacked him. They hacked him live on the air, by the way.
Yeah.
The call that we have in our video is the day before. The next day they hacked into him. He was on air. He was talking about how they were hacking into him. And they got a hold of a fax, an e-fax, and then a paper fax. And these two faxes were done within an hour of each other. You can look at the timelines between the two of them. The first was the e-fax, which is very difficult to fake because it's metadata. You know, when all of our photographs, all of our, even if you print something out with your printer, there's metadata in that. So in order to prove that the hack was real, they produced his driver's license. They produced his marriage certificate, his social security card, several other documents that they wouldn't have been able to get a hold of if they hadn't have done that. But like we point out in the video, it was the fax to the FBI office agent Daphne Hearns, who was picked as the head of cyber task force by then FBI director Robert Mueller himself in 2012. So she was working at the Sacramento office, and he talks about how he was approached by them, how he was promised a bigger audience for doing this, messing up truckers to shut down America, which became Ride for the Constitution after he renamed it. And ever since then, he has tried to dispute, discredit this, and to an effect where it's left doubt in the audience. But if you know anything about computers, you know that the metadata on an e-fax or any electronic information that's sent via the internet in some form, especially an email, is easily obtainable. And that quashes any of your doubts about where things come from. So the metadata with this fax undeniably proves that it originated from his computer, sent through his servers, and then destination, the office in Sacramento and at the FBI office. So whether or not people want to believe that, I understand it's difficult to believe. I understand we don't want to believe it, because the funny thing is, we talk about how there's like COINTELPRO and there's undercover agents and they're doing all this stuff. But when it's actually presented to you with evidence, you immediately throw up that cognitive dissonance, because somewhere in the back of your mind, you don't believe that there are people infiltrating. You don't believe that the FBI has, you know, people in media. You know it. You've read it. You've seen
but it's not this guy here.
Deep down inside, you really just don't believe that.
It's not this guy here, because he's my hero.
And that's another aspect of it, too. Yeah. You have personal interest. This person has touched you emotionally.
That's right.
And you have invested interest in them, and they're part of your personal paradigm.
That's right.
And so for them to not be the person that you thought they were, which nobody is the people that we think they are.
That's right. I mean, hey, come on. This, you know, the beautiful woman on Fox or CNN or MSNBC, they're just so lovely, they wouldn't be lying to me, right?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, this guy's a journalist. He wouldn't lie to me.
That's right.
But folks, they are interested in ratings. Yes, Pete Santilli has worked with the FBI, but Pete Santilli is also interested in having a huge career. You have to also remember, he wasn't the Marine that he says he was. He moved boxes from airplanes to trucks. Now, in some of those boxes happened to be weapons, but he didn't get to touch the weapons. He didn't get to open the boxes and play with it. It wasn't like Christmas morning.
Right.
He was just moving boxes, and he broke his leg because he didn't even want to do that. He served the minimum amount of time and graduated with an E4, which is pretty damn low. I mean, people have argued that, you know.
That's only three ranks above the lowest that there is.
Yes. Now, it's very, very difficult to graduate after 5 years of service as a private.
Yeah. Normally, people make sergeant after 5 years.
Yeah, you would think. So this guy didn't write Rex 84. This guy wasn't involved in anything.
He claimed to write Rex 84?
But now what he's doing is he's out there in his camo and he plays G.I. Joe. And it's thrilling to him. It's fun and it's exciting. And he gets to be on television. He gets all these fans and people donate money to him. The intoxication of that alone, if you want to throw out all of the FBI stuff and all of his seedy involvement, just look at the intoxication of him playing G.I. Joe. Somebody like that should not be part of a potential movement that is definitely armed and have said they don't mind killing people or being killed in order to get their point across.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I hadn't realized that he claimed to write Rex 84. Is that what you said?
Yeah, he said that after he broke his leg, he was given desk duty, and across his desk came this thing that became Rex 84, and he was tasked with helping to write it.
Well, I can imagine that if I think they actually implemented that Rex 84 back in the late 70s or early 80s or whatever, but I think the concept of that probably goes back a lot farther than 1984.
No, he's just a ridiculous liar. As far as the Coca-Cola thing goes, he was working for a law firm from a guy named James S. Davis, and he was making phone calls trying to get people to use that law firm. You know, he was doing cold calls, calling himself a consumer advocate. And James Davis and him got this wacky idea because he was also working with Crown Distributing, who distributes things like Coca-Cola and other products. And so the truck drivers were not getting paid for the time that they were on the clock, let alone overtime that they were being forced to work. So James Davis and Pete Santilli, because James Davis is an attorney or was an attorney at the time, James Davis helped Pete Santilli get his name on the lawsuit. But here's the funny thing. It was a class action lawsuit. because Pete Santilli's name was on the lawsuit and he had no stake in the matter, he was not a truck driver, he was not impacted by the allegations in the complaint, that lawsuit was thrown out of court and the people had to refile the class action lawsuit, which cost them more money in filing fees. That's
it,
the truth.
Yeah. Is it because of some action of Pete Santilli?
Absolutely, because he attached his name to the class action. Class action lawsuits, the people who bring them can only be directly affected by the complaints, the allegations in the complaint.
Right, right.
So because he was never a truck driver and he was not affected by the lost wages or the working overtime and not being paid, his name on the class action lawsuit invalidated it, so they had to refile. And we have a screenshot of that from the Coca-Cola website.
Can somebody say plant?
He just wanted, we were talking about, I think, $20 million or more in winnings. He wanted a piece of the pie.
Well, certainly, certainly. Unless he was a plant.
No.
No.
No, he's not a plant. He really is just a really big douchebag. That's really what it boils down to. Yes, the FBI used him during Operation OutTruck. I wish I had evidence that other stuff that he's done, was he had an involvement with the FBI. I don't. But really and honestly, when you look at his history over the span of 30 years, going all the way back to when he was in the Marines, you see a pattern of infiltration of movements, trying to get financial gain, and being a complete psychopathic douchebag to people, threatening them. He broke and entered into a house and got him and his wife arrested. The lawyer that helped him get on the Coca-Cola lawsuit ended up suing him for civil harassment, which the legal definition in California, the state where it was filed, is harassment, like violent harassment, threats of destruction of your personal life, your personal body, your personal property. These are the kind of things that Pete Santilli was doing and saying to him, to the extent where this man filed a lawsuit against him to keep himself safe from Pete Santilli.
Did anything ever come about?
Unfortunately, we don't have the outcome of that lawsuit. I wish that we did, but we don't have access to it.
Okay, yeah.
He's done that since. Didn't he do that to Jim Fetzer?
Yeah,
it seems like. He's done it to his listeners.
Explain that a little bit.
Jim Fetzer, he recorded Backchat when they were off the air, and then he published it publicly. And if you listen to the Backchat, he's inciting Jim Fetzer, who is already incited, to become even more belligerent and more inappropriate, just to make him look bad.
Yeah, yeah.
He threatened to beat up a paraplegic in a wheelchair.
Yes.
One caller whom he didn't like, he went and found his name, address, phone number.
Posted on the internet, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Really nice guy.
Yeah, wonderful guy. Fabulous person. Specimen of all that is great about humanity. You know, a couple of days before Christmas, he was in Ohio visiting with Susanna Cole's family, and he got pulled over for texting while driving. And he happened to have a loaded weapon with extra magazine clips in the car.
Yeah.
Which is illegal in the state of Ohio, especially since he didn't have a permit.
I think it's illegal anywhere.
Well, in the state of Ohio, you're not allowed to carry your gun loaded in your car, even with a permit.
I think it's illegal anywhere, Suzanne.
I don't know, because Texas just changed their laws. So I don't know if I can say that across the board. But as far as Ohio, because we looked into it. And by the way, a local news station was looking into this, too, because here's the funny thing about that. He was arrested. They said that his name looked similar to a name that is on the watch list, the terror watch list, which, by the way, I don't know if everybody is aware of this. Pete Santilli has aliases, and we go over that in the video. He has other versions of his name that he goes by. So the police officers that pulled him over might not be aware that even one letter change in a name, they might have actually had the guy.
Yeah.
But he got out with zero bail. His charges were dismissed. And he was charged with something with a minimum of 6 months in jail and $1,000 in fines, maximum 8 years in jail and $5,000 in fines. How did he walk away from that?
Yeah.
And then a couple of weeks later, end up in Oregon.
Sounds a little interesting there, don't it?
It sounds very interesting. And it wasn't just us who found that interesting. It was the local news who were covering it in Ohio who made the connection as well, that this same guy that they had in their custody, who may or may not have been on the terror watch list, happened to show up a couple of weeks later, zero bail, charges dismissed in Oregon.
Well, maybe they need to be sent a lot more information Suzanne, like all of the stuff that everyone else has accumulated.
Well, I did make sure that the video got into the hands of the reporter who made the report for the local news in Ohio.
Yeah.
And I have made sure that our video got into the hands of Sheriff David Ward and several other people in the local government who should be made aware that this person does have a history, and whether or not it's information that's pertinent to them at the time for what they're doing right now, I don't know, but at least they have it.
Yeah. It'll probably take a minimum of 6 months to do much of anything about that anyway, so as far as their part is.
Well, at least they know who they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And they know what he's capable of. I mean, during Jade Helm, he was out there telling his audience that they needed to bust open containers if they saw them on rail lines and take guns out and redistribute them to the public.
Yes.
If his audience had done that, they would have been attacking U.S. military.
Yes, they would have.
Would have kicked off something.
I wonder why he wasn't charged with inciting riots.
I don't know how he gets away from this, unless he's still working with the FBI or working with somebody who makes it very easy for him to get out of legal situations.
Yeah, there's reasons why you can't go into a movie theater and yell fire, because people will riot and people will get hurt.
See, that's the funny thing. We agree that some restrictions on our inalienable rights allow all of us to remain safe and free.
Yeah.
And I know it's a paradox that some people just don't understand, but wait for it to happen to you. Okay. And then you'll understand. Yes, we have free speech, but we have free speech in a pertinent, respectful kind of way. Like you were just mentioning, you don't yell fire in the middle of a crowded theater, especially in Texas where they have open carry. Don't do it, because when the room gets dark and nobody can see anything,
that's right.
And all of these John Wayne types pull out their guns and
that's
start
right.
shooting up the joint.
That's right. Yeah, I'm all for open carry, but there are some circumstances that it shouldn't be allowed.
I'm all for the Second Amendment, but we have to understand that the way in which we view the Second Amendment has drastically changed over the last 70 years. Before that, even at the time that the Second Amendment was written and all of those founding fathers were being, you know, serving their time as presidents and being part of the new government that they had set up, everyone understood that the right of the Second Amendment applied to state militias, because the states had the right to keep their own individual armies and fully stocked and ready to go at any moment. And that would never be infringed upon. And still to this day, the states have the right to have their own militia. It wasn't until about 70 years ago that we started to look at the Second Amendment in another way, that it applied to every single person in the United States. And I'm not lying, folks. That's historical fact. Go look it up. So now we have this new idea of how to interpret the Second Amendment. And I'm not saying that we should go back to the way it was originally interpreted, the way that it was even during the days of our founding fathers. But I am saying that, just like with not yelling fire in a theater, maybe we should think about the fact that, I don't know, some of these gun stores sell, like Badger Guns in Wisconsin is responsible for more than 537 guns getting into the hands of criminals through straw man purchases. 40% of guns are sold through straw man purchases to criminals through the gun shops.
What is a straw man purchase?
When two people go into a store and the one who is most likely to pass the background check actually fills out the paperwork.
Okay.
Now, there is also a proceed sale, which terrifies me to no end. You go in there, into the gun shop, you fill out the paperwork, and before it is completed and the background check itself is completed, you are given the gun in lieu of the background check going through. That's horrible. What?
Yeah, sure. I think I seen something a few weeks back. It was some sort of organization that goes around the country, and I don't know whether they just tried to do that thing, but that's what they were doing. They were trying to go in and buying 3, 4, and 5 AK-47s or AR-15s, and they were going to gun shows and stuff like that, and they were trying to pull a straw man purchase off, and most of the places that they went into didn't really fall for it, but...
Most of them don't. I'm not talking about every gun shop is like these gun shops, but particularly with Badger Guns, because they were sued by two cops who were injured with guns by criminals who had gotten their guns at Badger Guns in Wisconsin. During the course of the trial, video from inside the gun shop with the owner of Badger Guns and one of his managers helping these people fill out their straw man purchases.
Yeah.
All the paperwork. telling them what to check off, what to say, how to say it. That needs to stop.
Yeah.
I think we can all agree.
There are a lot of people in this country that don't need to have firearms or weapons of any kind. That's for sure. I'll admit that. I will. I'll be the first. There are a lot.
No, I've been trashed by the alternative media for saying it, but I think we all agree. I think we all agree deep down inside. You don't have to do it publicly because all your friends are watching and they've all got guns.
Yeah.
But I think we all agree that we don't want people who are violent criminals to have access to them. And we don't want people who have a violent mental history to have access to them. I think we all agree with that. We all agree as well that gun owners don't always do the best thing. We've got a kid last week who grabbed a hold of his father's gun, who was just laying around in the garage, and shot himself to death.
I got a personal story on that. And before we end up, Suzanne, we got about 2 minutes left. But I have a 30-year-old nephew. 15 years ago, he might not have been around if it weren't for about 3/4 of an inch. Him and his buddy, they were both about 15 years old, and they got a hold of a handgun from somebody's house and ended up being loaded, and he got shot within 3/4 of an inch of his thumeral artery in his leg.
In order to get NRA certified, you only have to go through 8 hours of training, and only 2 of that is with a live firearm.
Yeah.
Okay. We have many, many instances. There was another instance last week of a father who just killed his 14-year-old son because his son came home late and he thought he was an intruder. Who these good guys with guns are, I don't know, but only 3% of good guys with guns survive an encounter with an assailant with a weapon. Only 3%. So I really think we just need to sit down and think about this logically, put our emotions aside and decide what's best, because most of us have children and we don't want to get a phone call or have a cop show up at our door or hear a shot on the other side of our house and realize, oops, we forgot to put away our gun.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you to take us out with the last minute here or so, but you kind of did there already. So your site is OccupyCorporatism.com.
Yes. And my radio show is hosted on my website 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can get a new episode. Just go to the Hardline Archives at the top of the front page at OccupyCorporatism.com.
And thank you for coming on, Suzanne.
Thank you very much.
Have a nice day. And we'll be right back, everyone, after these messages.